From Reclaim the Media in Seattle and the Northwest Community Radio Network, it's Listen Up Northwest. Each week we bring you a roundup of stories from communities throughout our region. I'm your host, Yuko Kadama. Getting in shape is on everyone's mind as the weather warms up. Today we'll hear from people involved in some unusual yet friendly local competitions that make it all the more fun. Some thick-skinned women play the fast game of roller derby in Idaho. Here, Castle Wood of the radio program Vox gets us in on a practice session.
Let me introduce the Treasure Valley Roller Girls. Sexy-assed, fun-loving, speed-skating ladies that love to derby. If you're looking for a full-contact team sport that flaunts sex appeal and athleticism, derby is it. Strategy, sweat, stockings, and stitches are all part of what make these chicks tick.
Wait, okay, not everybody at once. They are using strategy against us. And it's simple derby. Back to basics. It's like, damn. Why are they going so fast? Oh, because they have four people and we have three. Exactly. If we get one of their people, we need to slam on those brakes. Don't keep chasing them after them.
Exactly. That's what somebody happened. Had cramps behind it, and everybody kept going.
And I was like,
you have, even though you were the back person, slam on your brakes so you have cramps and everybody else can slam on the brakes too.
Don't keep chasing after them.
Even if there's a wall up front, don't stand right behind them. Either get in front of them or you slam on your brakes. Do not stay right behind them for more than 5 seconds.
Toughness is what keeps derby girls going, and it all starts when you're fresh meat.
Are you thinking about your derby persona?
I am a little bit. I don't have an alias yet. I'm thinking about it. I'm open for suggestions right now, but Jessie the Pussycat is she's the instructor of the fresh meat. The other fresh meat I came with tonight is Carly. She's Monster Monroe. She's, you know, blonde and beautiful like Marilyn, so that's her alias.
What's your name?
My name's Kelly, and I don't have a derby name yet.
Yeah, so. And something like Killer Kelly maybe is too cliche.
Yeah, somebody's brought up Kelter Skelter. It's kind of dark. Someone tonight said Kelly Kapowski. I don't know. I have to pick.
Kelly Kapowski, I like. That has a kind of a jaunty ring to it.
Yeah, and well, I'm a dental assistant, so someone else is thinking dental damage or something.
Yeah, it'd be cool if you could, like, mix Kelly with root canal or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, Kelly laughing gas or Kelly anesthesia. I mean, something like that, you know, like she's going to put you out.
Hey, that's good. Never thought of that one.
Something like that. Yeah, yeah. Are you pretty bruised up?
No, not yet. I will be, though. My right arm was a little bit bruised last week, but at the bouts, though, I can see their shoulders. Like, they're just pounding into each other, and they're just red. And the weekend practices that Josie on Sundays, you know, she'll be like, hey, look at this bruise. Look at this one. Yeah. Did you see so-and-so?
Is there kind of a pride in the war wounds?
I think there is. I haven't gotten any yet.
Besides learning the ropes as fresh meat, that's derby talk for new girl. How to skate, how to fall and get up fast, how to hit and take a hit. The girls spend a lot of time bringing their sport to their fans and giving back to the community. Referee Oliver Closeoff Wendell Holmes explains.
What kind of community outreach events are you guys involved in?
Well, we get involved with a lot of different charities. We have a different one every month. I think we have the Meth Project this month. And if they're doing some sort of event, then we try to get in conjunction with them for an event. In the past, we've painted houses with Neighborhood Counting Services. We serve meals at the Mission. We'll have some girls at the public television telethon coming up in the next week or so.
Yeah, so these aren't just girls that are interested in team athletics. These are also girls that are really interested in being contributing positive members of their community.
Right, they're role models.
Wow, these girls are tough.
Yes.
Amazing. I mean, I'm really impressed watching them practice. This floor is like a rock.
If you practice long enough, you will get into it.
So, hands down, what is the sexiest thing about Roller Girls? Oliver clothes off Wendell Holmes.
I'm going to be sappy and say that it's because that the sexiest thing about them is that they're all so welcoming. That they're happy to see more people come into the community. I didn't know how to skate when I got here. They were very patient. They were great helping me learn how to do this. They've stuck with me the whole way, and I've stuck with them the whole way.
The hype around Derby, that the girls are pound dog mean and hovering somewhere near Dyke on the sexuality continuum, might be true some of the time. But who cares?
So what do you do with the rest of what do you do in your life outside of Derby?
I actually work in St. Luke's.
As?
I'm a genetic counselor in maternal fetal medicine. Yeah, it doesn't really fit the bill, does it?
Well, no, it seems like that does fit the bill because it seems like that, you know, all these women are doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they have all kinds of interesting lives outside of Derby, and Derby is something that brings them all together.
Exactly. And I think once you get over a certain age, in your 20s and your 30s, some of us in our 40s, there's not much available to you to really find a group of women who are going to be there to support one another and to, you know, be athletic, be competitive, you know, stay fit and healthy. And this is what roller derby has been able to provide all of us. So we're very lucky.
Yeah,
very
and lucky also a kind of a great fun way to show off.
That's very true. That we all have our... We have our personas that we adopt, and it's a lot of fun.
Tough, athletic, and competitive, the Treasure Valley Roller Girls just want to have some fun and some stinky sister time. As hip-hop poet Talib Kweli says, the truth is so boring, you gotta pretend a little.
Castle Wood of Radio Boise contributed that piece. You would think adults riding children's bikes would be a circus act, but for rollo players, it's a serious business when they take to their seats to play this street version of polo. Said to have started in Portland, it was in its heyday only a few years ago. Producers Nathan Friend and Brad Iverson Long first aired the piece in 2007 on Seattle's KOOW.
My name's Jake Ryder. I brought it to Seattle, but I definitely didn't found Rollo at all. Rollo was actually started down in Portland by a guy named Dan Schaefer and kind of his crew of people called Zoo Bomb. And they bombed down the Portland Zoo Hill into downtown on little kids' bikes like these, you know, 16-inch wheels or smaller. And then they'd play rollo, bike polo, on little bikes to kind of finish off the night. And it sort of became like this extra activity that Zoo Bomb will do. And then when my girlfriend Leslie and I went down to Portland a while back, and we totally got hooked on it and loved it and brought it back. We knew we had some friends that had mini bikes just for fun. So we were like, all right, we've got enough mini bikes. We've got enough friends that have mini bikes. Let's see if we can get a game going.
The rules are pretty easy.
We play teams of 4-on-4.
You ride around with the mallet in your hand.
If you touch your foot to the ground, you have to get back on your bike and like do a whole 360 before you can get back in the game.
It forces you to stay in control of your bike. It adds that extra level of challenge, keeps people from just running around with their bike or planting a foot to score a really good shot.
You have to shoot with the ends of your mallet. You can't push it with the side.
And the third rule is you cannot pass the ball through the goal from the opposite side to another player. To who will score it.
Bike rules, 16-inch wheels or less.
It's not average wheel size. It's, you know, the full size of the wheels. You can modify the bike any which way that you want, but there can't be any threatening protrusions or anything like that.
You can't have pegs on it because it destroys other bikes.
Otherwise, it's all about having fun and meeting good people and playing a little bike polo.
Why don't you guys wear helmets? You're not that far off the ground. You generally have... You hit the ground before your head can get there.
Yeah, honestly, I spent all $10 on the bike.
Where do you guys get your bikes at?
Value Village.
Goodwill Outlet, $4.
There's also a guy named Bicycle Bob in Ballard that has a pretty good selection.
And they're like $5, right?
Right, they're like $5, and he has like a bunch of kids' bikes in his yard, which is kind of creepy if you think about it.
Yeah.
Right across from the school.
Shoot it, shoot it!
How do you guys make the mallets?
A bunch of people have different methods.
People can use really anything that they find comfortable, lacrosse sticks, broom handles.
Yeah. Some people use bamboo, ski poles, golf clubs, and cut those off at a certain length that you feel comfortable with.
Usually about 2.5 feet or so.
And take some PVC pipe, and like 4-inch PVC pipe, and cut it and just drill it.
And kind of T-bones it on the end, a couple of screws and some glue, and you're good to go. This is great because we're underneath I-5, and so it becomes it's a really great spot for us to play. We're covered by the freeway. We've got lights so we can play no matter what. And even if it's pouring rain, they usually only get a little bit wet, so it's kind of an all-weather location. And it's a reuse of urban space. We're down here when nobody's parked down here and making use of the spot. The city doesn't mind us being here, unofficially. Police have come down and watched games. Seattle Department of Transportation has come down and watched games. We had one van, I think maybe our fourth or fifth night playing. And they pulled up, they turned on their flashers just to give us some disco lights when we played.
Usually on a good night, around like 9 or 10 o'clock at night, we usually get about maybe 20, 25 people here. Some nights we've gotten more, about 40. Well, after you played for a while, the part that you really get messed up on are your hands from hitting other people's mallets or falling. So, as you see from my hands, they're pretty marked up tonight. Asphalt, a little bit of cuts. So, yeah, I should start wearing gloves.
Recount your thumb injury for the rest of us. I know it's painful.
I know it is painful. And really, I have to admit that the first time I did it is because I was trying to ride a wheelie.
During the middle of the game?
No, it wasn't even during the game. It was totally not during the game. And I fell and hit it, and it hurt. But then during the game, I fell and hit it in exactly the same spot.
Ah.
So let's see. So I landed on the top side of my thumb, and it blew up like a balloon. And a month later, I finally went to the doctor and found out that I had a bony mallet, which is a tendon injury when the tendon gets pulled really hard and it takes the bone with it. So the bone broke and moved 2 millimeters away from the rest of the bone. So then I had surgery, and they put in a screw, a pin, and a piece of wire.
And for a game that was supposed to be cheap to play, how much money would that have cost had insurance not been there to save the day?
I think it's something around $6,000 worth of insurance-paid medical work.
So I played big bike polo, regular polo as far as everyone else is concerned. And it's a lot of fun, but this is really accessible. It's really friendly. Like, anyone can show up and say, oh, you know, I've totally ridden little kids' bikes when I was growing up. It looks so cute and fun, and they're cheap. So it's just totally accessible to anybody that wants to come out and have a good time. And it's friendly and makes it more playful. It gets competitive, and we'll have intense games, but this keeps it on a level of ridiculousness that keeps everybody smiling and happy and doesn't let anyone take it too seriously, which just makes it really great.
Is there anything else about Rolo that I haven't asked you about that I should know about the sport?
You should probably play the next game.
Brad did play in the next game, but it was his first time on a kid's bike since he was a kid. Needless to say, he left scoreless.
That piece was produced by Nathan Friend and Brad Iverson Long at KUOW's VoxPod back in 2007. Rolo matches don't take place under the I-5 flyover anymore, but you can see it played in some of the neighborhoods of Seattle. Twice a week, the Boise Wonders practice for statewide soccer competition. To this team made up of refugees from Africa, it's more than a game. It's a chance to heal. Here's Sadie Babbitts with their story.
Rays of sunlight filter through towering elm trees as a group of men kick around a soccer ball. You can find this team here in this Boise park every Tuesday and Thursday evening. All of the players are refugees from Africa. They call themselves, naturally, the Africa team. But in the Southern Idaho Soccer League, they're officially known as the Boise Wonders.
My name is Ibrahim Kituta Asimba. I'm from Congo.
How long have you been playing soccer?
Oh, I've been playing soccer since my childhood.
Asimba is one of 16 soccer players that make up the Africa team. When he sees me, he leaves the practice and appoints himself the group's spokesman. It's a natural fit for him. Asimba wants to study communications. He tells me he'll play any position on the field, but loves kicking the ball the most.
Oh, soccer means everything to me. Believe me, if you take soccer away from me, then you are taking all my life away. And it does me good. I mean, I feel good when I play soccer.
He says when he came to Boise more than a year ago, he thought his soccer playing days were over. Soccer isn't nearly as big in the U.S. as it is in Africa. Then Asimba heard about this group through other refugees. He says there's something special about playing for a team with so many different nationalities.
That's the beauty of this Africa, the team which we want to build in Boise. We want to make sure that all the African people come together and unite, toward this team. So I hope in future that it will bring all the people together.
Yo, captain!
Come here. Yeah, he's captain.
The team's captain, 26-year-old Fidel Nashambo, jogs over to the sidelines. Nashambo grew up in Congo, but he was separated from his family during the Civil War there. On his own, from the age of 12, he spent a decade as a refugee in 8 different African countries. 3 years ago, he resettled in Boise.
So in refugee camps, the most thing people do was playing soccer. Every day, the best of the day is the time of practice and soccer practice. So that commitment, that love of the game, and it brings a lot of happiness and healing into the process.
That healing comes simply from playing, sharing, and laughing with teammates. Midfielder Muhadin Aden from Somalia ducks out for a break. He goes by the name Bushka.
I remember last week I scored one goal over there. One of the best goals I've never imagined in my life.
In Africa, I think, Bushka, you were telling me you didn't play with shoes.
Over there, like, as you're from, like, Kenya, like, as a refugee over there, because shoes, a lot of money, we play without shoes and then no grass.
Asimba and Nashambo join the conversation.
Yeah, you know, soccer in Africa, you know, so many people, so many families cannot afford to buy soccer booth and balls, so sometimes we make our artificial balls.
These are soccer balls made out of used plastic bags, carefully wrapped together and tied tightly with string. It's getting dark, so Nashambo calls the team together for a final chat. They talk about how practice went and find out they're getting a new player. The conversation shifts as Nashambo calls a teammate out for having a poor attitude.
I really want you to focus and to be part of the family. You have to smile, you have to talk when you're playing. Don't have the attitude on your face like you were doing today and playing lazy.
Nashambo wants the Africa team to be a positive experience for young players and for the community.
We need to show the people that the refugees are not just people who have been devastated by the wars. So we need to come together as a family.
That soccer family, Nashambo says, is helping these players move past their own devastating stories to fully embrace their new lives in Idaho, both on and off the field.
Today, and I think we had a great practice. So Thursday again, same time.
Sadie Babbitts of World Vision Report contributed that piece. Hear host Logic Amen interviews Joaquim Allah, a coach in Seattle's inner city, about what being involved in sports means to children in his community.
Tell us a story. When was the first time you started participating in youth sports?
I started swimming and taekwondo, a little different than some of the normal sports that people in the inner city, at least in my neighborhood, would do. I was a swimmer. You know, went to the Junior Olympics, was in the process of qualifying for regionals. And, one of the things that that happened that kind of threw me in swimming was just it. I couldn't look out and see people who looked like me. At first, it wasn't that much of an issue. You know, I had teammates, I had coaches, you know, I had people who I'd been around, you know, day in, day out. But one particular incident, I think I'm out in Anacortes, Washington, and I'm trying to qualify for the regionals in swimming. And I swim the first race, and I think I placed like fourth or fifth or something like that. I can continue on, essentially, but I'm just there with my dad. And, you know, I love swimming, I love competing, but this was the first time I felt self-conscious about any of that. We were the only black folks in the building, period. No other teams had any other people of color. It was all white. Around the competitors, I started hearing little side comments, and that's what really made me a little self-confidence about being there. And so that was probably one of the last times I swam competitively, to tell you the truth.
When you look back at that incident where you being the only black person in that place and the experiences that you encountered and the things you heard, the whole atmosphere, what did you learn from that?
I wish I would have continued. Nothing else, just to stick it to those guys. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, in life, sometimes you're going to not have the home court advantage. You're going to have certain issues that you're going to have to deal with. You're going to have to persevere. And that is one thing I wish I would have done differently. I wouldn't have traded that experience, though. It did let me kind of see what I needed to see at that time. And that was, it wasn't all, you know, one utopia, if you will. People are people, you know, and it was okay to move on into something else that I felt a little more comfortable with.
What kind of impact, while coaching youth sports, do you see you have on the youth, and what kind of impact does that have on you as a person?
Well, as far as the impact goes, I think it's just a human connection. You know, in a lot of situations, some of these kids don't have father figures or fathers, you know, in the household. And a lot of times this can be a glorified babysitting position, or you can use it to some way, some kind of rites of passage, if you will. You know, you're dealing with a human being for 4 or 5 months out of the year, for at least 1 month out of August, every day for 2 or 3 hours. I mean, it's more than just football when you actually got them for a little bit. When you're able to, through time, through effort, through persistence, commitment, you're able to touch that child, or you're able to guide them in some ways. I mean, if you use it more than just using them for their talents, you know, you're interested in their schoolwork and their home life, you know, what their dreams or aspirations are. You know what I mean? A lot of people, just all we want. You want somebody to listen to you, be heard. I mean, there's a position for everybody on the team, whether it's the, you know, the one who is just there and they're finishing that year, and that's a great achievement. That's a victory for that child. And then you have the ones who have all kind of talent, but they don't have the desire to be great. If you can try to make them elevate their game, that's an accomplishment in that. You know, there's little battles that you have to try and find satisfaction in.
You're seeing kids being exploited for their physical talents. Like, they just care about them playing ball, but they don't care about the other aspects of their lives, how they're doing at home, how they're doing in school, how they're doing in the community. You see that all the time?
Yeah.
Speak on that.
I mean, it's you'll hear about different organizations who might pay for this, pay for that, things of that nature. But anything else that's going on, it's a blind eye to it. This child has issues at home, has issues at school. Nobody cares, you know, as long as you're winning. And that's for Little League, not high school or college, just Little League. You'll see people who will go out their way, you know, give them rides and all other kind of stuff just to have them on their squad. I think it's a disservice to the youth, because you start teaching bad behaviors and they start feeling entitled.
What kind of opportunities would you like to see youth in the inner city have?
I think some kind of like martial arts or discipline to start off with. I mean, just because of, like I said, the mental focus and discipline that comes into it, as, along with the physical part. And I mean, I think if everybody knows what they're physically capable of, I don't think there would be a need or so much of a feeling of a need to grab a weapon or a gun. You know what I mean? If you know how to handle yourself and you can carry yourself in a proper manner, you don't need to reach for nothing. You don't need to go get nobody. You're okay, you know?
So self-confidence, self-esteem is big. Martial arts would be something to be good. Definitely. To have some inner city kids have opportunities to do martial arts to build their self-esteem and self-confidence. Why is it usually just football, basketball, and track? Why isn't it debate, chess, spelling bee, swimming?
I mean, that's the first thing that you're going to think or you're going to hear. That's, why do you want to do that? That's not why folks do that. At least that's what I heard, you know? And after a while, it does kind of wear on you, you know? But again, money plays a lot to do with all those things.
That was Joaquim Allah, interviewed by Logic Amen on Speak On It Radio, heard on KBCS in Seattle. Here again is Logic Amen as he comments on the relationship between sports and social justice in our communities.
I am concerned about the brand of youth development taught by some coaches. I coach youth sports. I remember losing one game 94-14. The other coach showed little to no mercy but apologized after the game. Then there was one game where my team was winning by a considerable margin against a team that was playing with five players. Towards the end of the game, one of their players fouled out. Instead of the opposing team playing with four players against my five, I asked the ref to allow the player to remain in the game. As far as I was concerned, the game was won, so I worked on another goal. Sportsmanship, respect for your opponent, compassion. The opposing coach thanked me during and after the game. I think when we coach youth to embarrass and humiliate their opponent, we are indirectly teaching them that it is acceptable to take advantage of people when they are vulnerable. I think this brand of coaching is a barrier to teaching acts of social justice. We should take all opportunities to teach youth how to be compassionate in a capitalist system predicated on getting rich almost by any means necessary. I think competition at times brings out the worst in us. I think competition too many times teaches us that it's okay to conquer those who appear to be weaker or vulnerable. I think this mindset is what leads to racism, sexism, class discrimination, and other forms of oppression. I think your biggest and most worthy opponents should be the weaker parts of yourself, your limitations, the choices that lead to non-productive consequences. I think the biggest losers in life are the people who seek to win at any cost, who will sacrifice relationships to win an argument, who will break rules to get ahead, and who end up losing everything trying to win it all. So here's a tip. Instead of trying to beat the next person, concentrate on being a better person.
That was Logic Amen. He has a weekly commentary on KDCS Community Radio. Listen Up Northwest is produced by Reclaim the Media at the studios of KBCS for the Northwest Community Radio Network. Find out more at listenupnw.org. Thanks to contributors Logic Amen, Sadie Babbitts, Nathan Friend, Brad Iverson Long, and Castle Wood. Music by Northwest artists The Correspondents, Electron Love Theory, and DJ B-Girl. Our copy editor is Robin Block. Thank you for listening to and supporting this community radio station. For Listen Up Northwest, this is Yuko Kadama.